Let's talk about how it plays out in real life. And Jenny, you have a 68-year-old lady. Maybe we can just focus on what happened when she got the pembrolizumab, what kind of condition she was in, what you told her about, and kind of how you managed her.
Yeah, so this is a patient with recurrent endometrial cancer. She has MSS, so she's stable. And we started her after completing a clinical trial with avelumab and talazoparib. She progressed but just slightly on trial, but enough to kick her off. So we said, hey, we can give her an IO on label. So we did the pembro plus lenvatinib. We start our patients, I think the starting dose is 20 milligrams. We usually start everyone at 10 because of the toxicities we've been seeing. And then maybe after 3 days, a week or so, then we will increase to 14, maybe 18. Although I've never gotten anyone there, to be honest. I'm curious to see if anyone else has. So she experienced hypertension fairly quickly after increasing her dose to 14 milligrams, which is typical. She messaged me one morning. Her blood pressure was pretty high, 180 over 116. She wasn't symptomatic. Over the course of the day, we finally got her blood pressure under control with two different agents, which is also typical. And then, let's see, I think the slide up right now is about a week or two later, her blood pressure was stable. So that was good. But she was telling me she's feeling awful, no energy, no interest in doing anything, not exercising, no appetite. I mean, this sounds horrible, right? This is the woman, she has grandkids and a lake house and a very active person. So this just was not compatible with her goals. So what we did was hold her drug for about a week. She started to feel a lot better. We also did labs at that time and we obtained a thyroid function test and we did note that she was hypothyroid. So this could have been from either lenvatinib or pembro. We don't know, but I was able to start her on some thyroid replacement. And I mean, this was only like a week or two ago, but she's doing okay. And we did restart her back on 10 milligrams rather than the 14 milligrams.
And, you know, through the course of this series, Thursday night when we get along, we'll be talking a lot about checkpoint inhibitor toxicity. Certainly hypothyroidism is a very common problem. We can go into the next case, but Jenny, maybe you can just comment on her as a person. That henna tattoo looks pretty.
Yeah, so I love this slide. This is when she had her initial chemotherapy. She obviously lost her hair and had a henna tattoo of a lily. And this was in remembrance of one of her granddaughters who she lost to SIDS a couple years back. That's her lake house I talked about. When her hair grew back, she dyed it purple. Those are her grandkids. So she's just a wonderful person and full of life. And I love this quote. When I was telling her I was going to present her, she was super excited. And she sent me all these pictures. And she said at the end of our conversation, "I'm old, I'm short, and sometimes feel invisible. That's why I dyed my hair purple. Thank you for making me feel seen and heard," which I thought was just a great, yeah, exactly. Dr. Romali's clapping right now. So that was a really good nursing moment.
So yeah, lots of moments like that in oncology. Let's just briefly hear about another patient who got this combination. It's always good to talk to people. We have new combinations that come out. I remember when pembro and lenvatinib came out, there was a lot of nervousness in the gynecologic oncology community. Lenvatinib had hardly been used at all at that point. But now I think things are settling in a little bit. What happened with this 67-year-old woman, Paula, particularly when she got the lenvatinib?
Yeah, so she was a transfer patient for us. She lived in Philadelphia and she was living alone and not doing well. And so they started her on the standard of care, pembro and 200 milligrams every 3 weeks, and then the lenvatinib, 20 milligrams PO. It's interesting that you start at a lower dose. I think as we learn more about this, I know Dr. O'Malley did the studies, so he's going to be my go-to. But I think about liposomal doxorubicin. We no longer use the FDA dose in niraparib. There's controversy, but so it'll be interesting on this. The other thing is when we order this, I don't know if it's laziness on my part, but even with the olaparib, I don't order the two different doses nor with this. So I'm just ordering the 10 milligram tablets. And so when we dose reduce, we go down to 10 rather than 14, which is not what the package insert says. But anyway, she presented to us with the standard dose of 200 and then 20 PO, but then she was having toxicity. So her physician in Philadelphia dose reduced her to the 10, which is probably what we would have done. And she responded as far as quality of life goes. She was feeling better. She moved out here because her children lived here. She was a widow living alone. She did have fatigue, but she was able to enjoy her family, her ADLs. But interesting, she stayed on this drug for 6 months, stable disease, and then she presented with bone mets, and she just recently passed away. But going off on another tangent, she had 103 temperature during this time, so she was admitted to rule out COVID, which she did not have, and so we knew that she had progressed, and they wouldn't discharge her. And my physician is like, what are you talking about? They're like, well, we have to work up the fever. And it's like, oh my gosh, her family can't be with her. This woman is dying. Please let her go home to be with her family because nobody could see her. And those were some of the things during COVID, which were so sad that loved ones couldn't be with their dying family members. She was discharged in stable condition and she died within a month, but she was home with her family. And that was, we take care of these people, but we also want them to die well. We want them to have dignity and also be surrounded by their loved ones. And I didn't mean this to be like sad and everything, but the good news is she had 6 months of quality life that she would not have had had she not had this combination. This was a third line treatment for her.
This is a slide from Paula's talk. I again recommend you take a look at it. She goes through a lot of these thoughts, I think are very interesting and provocative. We're going to talk about cervical cancer in a second, but just circling back to the lenvatinib pembro, Shannon, can you talk a little bit more? I put that question up about comparing the hypertension with Bev. Can you talk a little bit about what you see with this combination in terms of hypertension when the blood pressure goes up? I hear there's some people who give patients hypertensive meds to take home so they don't have to go to the pharmacy if they need them. And how do people feel? This woman had hypothyroidism, but can you see people feeling bad just from the lenvatinib?
From the hypertension standpoint, it's rapid when it happens. It's usually in the first week or so, and it seems much quicker than what we see with bevacizumab, but it does respond to antihypertensives. And so we actually do send patients home with a prescription. They either fill it or they just have the prescription and know they can fill it. We let them kind of decide what they want to do, but we do have that available for them so that they don't have a delay when they do see the blood pressure going up. And we found that that's been fairly successful. We have a great collaboration with our internal medicine colleagues at my institution, and we all work together to really get things under control. Because again, our goal is to see that 80% clinical benefit that Dr. O'Malley mentioned. And we certainly don't want to lose that just because we can't mitigate the toxicity. From a fatigue standpoint, I agree this patient had some other reasons for fatigue, but we do see pure fatigue just from the combination of the two treatments. And again, this for me is one of the reasons I do the most dose reductions. I said it before with PARP, same thing with the Len-Pem regimen. I think that it's really hard. We don't have a good drug to get people to feel better from a fatigue standpoint. So often you need to pause and do a dose reduction.
So one final question going back to you, Shannon. It's interesting. The last meeting, we were talking about the concept of the bond that heals. The fact that even if you can't slow the tumor down, you still give the patient the relationship, and that means a lot to them. And that comes through when we hear about how you talk about your patients. But I am curious, Jenny, it was mentioned about Pembro being given every 3 weeks, and there was just an approval for every 6 weeks. Seemed like pretty good timing because nowadays people are trying to keep people out of the hospital, keep them from infusion because of COVID. What are you doing in MGH about? Are you going to Q 6 weeks, Jenny?
Yep, we are. For most patients, they have agreed to 6 weeks. We have some patients that say, no, this 3 weeks, it's working beautifully. I don't want to change. You know, you always have those patients. But yeah, we're trying to switch people over. 6 weeks is so much better. But in that context, we still do want to see them more often than 6 weeks, even if it's a quick virtual. We're doing lots of virtual visits now. But yeah, we try in 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hear people talking about doing virtuals on patients who came in to get infusions that they actually don't. Then the patient goes home and then they talk to them on virtual.
Oh, yeah, so. We don't do it that. But
yeah, but interesting.